Welcome to the Urban Prepping Podcast. This is the podcast for being prepared and living a more self-sustaining lifestyle or self-sufficient lifestyle in the urban context. I'm your host. My name's Greg. I want to thank you all for listening to this podcast. First and foremost, I'm really interested to hear your feedback, good or bad. I'd love to know what you think of the show, so please let me know if you like it, if you hate it, why you hate it, what you do or don't like, any suggestions you have. You can reach me at loneurbanprepper@gmail.com. Also, please leave a review in the iTunes store. It'll make the podcast easier to find, and it'll help me sort of rise up in the ratings a little bit, or at least be easier to find, maybe not rise up in the ratings. So this is episode 3. We are going to talk about food today. Food storage, food prep, food production. This will also be an ongoing topic that I revisit regularly because it's something I want to cover. I'm going to revisit it frequently, and I'll tell you why in a bit. But basically, my plan's a work in process, a progress. Which, you know, as we know, as people who try to live a more prepared lifestyle, it's about being prepared. It's a journey. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So, as with a lot of our discussions, let me start off with my philosophy of use, or perhaps my food prep philosophy is maybe a more accurate description. So first and foremost, I don't believe in doomsday. I just don't think that what's going to happen to our society is some sort of scenario that you see in, you know, post-apocalyptic movies where there's no rule of law and gangs of, you know, brutal animals rule the wasteland and it's every man, woman, child for themselves and it's chaos and destruction. That makes for great television and movies, and I'll be really honest, I can't get enough of that stuff no matter how bad it is. I've always been drawn to the post-apocalyptic last man standing kind of storyline. You know, even the horrible movies from Postman, Waterworld, can't think of his name. But those movies are awful, you know, especially Waterworld. But, you know, if I'm flipping around on the TV, Postman's on, I watch it. Because, again, it's post-apocalyptic, and I'm a sucker for that stuff. So as much as I enjoy to watch it, as much as I sometimes think of my prepping or scenarios within that context, I don't really believe it's ever going to happen. First of all, there's just way too much at stake. There's way too much money at stake. And, you know, money and business, you know, the government are not going to allow that to happen. There's way too much at stake for the really powerful folks that ultimately control our country. Instead, really, what I think is more than likely is we'll probably end up, after some disaster, you know, certainly perhaps not completely without rule of law, but, you know, crime could go up, looting, riots. And I think what will happen is it'll open the door for a martial law, probably some sort of tyrannical government, further reduction of our liberties and rights. I mean, there are just way too many Americans that are entirely too happy to trade their rights for perceived safety and security. We see it all the time. We see it every day. The vast majority of Americans would rather the government take care of them, provide them with the things that they're supposed to be getting on their own right. You know, they want to feel safe and secure, and they gladly trade their liberties for it. Because frankly, I don't think they even really realize that they're trading their liberties for it. They're sort of curling up in this blanket of perceived safety when in fact, all they're doing is helping the government take away their freedoms and their liberties. I mean, look at post 9/11. You know, we as a country clamored for the kinds of things that George Bush put in place with the Patriot Act, and that was the single most reduction, erosion of liberties and freedoms that I think any one president's ever done. I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm not a historian, but I believe it's probably true. And it hasn't stopped since then, but that one act really sort of, I think, opened some floodgates for further erosion. And as a country, and I'll be honest, I was in New York at the time. I was angry. I was pissed off. We knew people who died. You know, I was in the city that day. And all the things that that the government, the president, that these people were telling us that needed to happen to keep us safer, to go after the guys that did this to us. I was like, yes, give it to me. I want to make sure that we can find those people and bring them to justice, go bomb them, whatever. So I was part of the problem, right? And there were a lot of people who were screaming about what this meant, and I didn't listen. I sort of pushed them away as being liberal or being silly or not getting it, you know, whatever. So I've kind of gone down a bit of a rat hole. But the point is that my underlying philosophy for being prepared, being self-sufficient, isn't based on some scenario where the world has ended. I just don't buy it. However, I do believe that it's entirely possible that things could get even worse, more crime, more riots, looting, economy in absolute shambles. And I think the response to that for the government will be sort of tyranny. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be shortages, that there won't be difficult to get things. There may be actually plenty of food on the shelves, but it may be so expensive that most of us can't afford it. I just recently read the book by Fernando, I think it's Aguirre, about surviving the economic collapse in Argentina. I think it's called, the actual book title is Surviving the Economic Collapse, a Modern Survival Manual by Fernando Farfal. I think it's Aguirre. Farfal is the, I think, the name he goes by online, and he's got a podcast. That really opened my eyes. It really opened my eyes to sort of the reality of how things might go down. So how this relates to food storage and production, I know I went on a bit of a rant there. It's important because in reality, I am way more interested in being self-sufficient, or at least reducing my reliance on industrial food production, than storing, you know, enough food to withstand the apocalypse. I don't have space to store several years worth of food. Remember, this is prepping from an urban context. You live in an apartment, maybe a small house, whatever. Not only that, I don't think I can store several years worth of food that my family prefers to eat. And while if we're hungry and people are starving, certainly we're not going to be picky, but ultimately you want to try to store what you eat. Because, you know, that involves, I don't necessarily, well, my family prefers to eat fresh food. And, you know, we eat meat and those sort of things. And I don't have the means to keep tons of meat unless I dry it or cure it or something, which at the moment I haven't done. But we'll get to that. So the point is I'm not sitting here waiting for tea at Waukee. I'm working to be more self-sufficient and prepared for any of life's little surprises. And, you know, a lot of podcasts really talk about this, that being prepared isn't just about doomsday. It's about all the things that life may throw at you. And I'm no different. And I guess I think the other aspect of being prepared is about self-sufficiency. And it's not about doing everything yourself, but it's about not relying on our industrial production of food or something else. Because those are the things, the supply chains, this industrial sort of complex, are going to be the things that either break apart in an economic collapse or a disaster, or could be out of reach due to the costs involved, meaning, you know, the average person, you know, the inflation may not be able to afford, you know, much. But, you know, as an example, I was just laid off for the third time in 5 years. It was happened a couple months ago. It's January now. It happened in November. Now, ultimately, this was a good thing. I hated my job, and life is way too short to hate what you do. But I was, you know, having a few months of food stored up, having gasoline stored, having cash in the safe, all makes it easier for us to sort of ride this out with as little disruption to my family as possible. Now, two more things that I'm working on to sort of help me be more self-sufficient is my own business and some level of food production. At some point in time, maybe we'll talk about the things I'm thinking about from my own business perspective. But, you know, my own food production is certainly something today that we'll get into. because, you know, again, to the level that we can make our own food or produce our own food is one less thing or a little bit less reliance on things that are ultimately out of our control. And because when it comes down to it, the underlying thought for me, and I actually, you know, my wife and I had a discussion about prepping, because when I first started doing it, she first thought it was funny, kind of a joke. She didn't get it. And then she kind of, it bothered her a little bit because she saw it as sort of a focus on the negative. But also she's like, I'm not sure I know who you're becoming. You know, you're, and I think what helped her understand it was when we sat down and talked about it. And I told her this, I said, look, I don't ever want to be in a situation where I'm relying on someone else to get us out of trouble. I don't ever want to be in a position where I'm relying on the mercy of some criminal, or hoping that that the authorities arrive after I've dialed 911 in time to save us from some dangerous situation. I don't ever want to be in a situation where we are huddled in a tent waiting for the government to come give us food and security. It just goes against every fiber of my being to ever be in a situation where I'm hoping someone else is going to pull me and my family out of trouble. And anything and everything I can do to increase my self-reliance and decrease my reliance on quote-unquote the system, not to sound all tin hat, but that's one step in the right direction for me. I am never going to be, I will most likely never be in a situation where we can produce all of our own food, where we're going to live off the grid. It's just not my family's lifestyle. It's certainly my wife has no interest in living off the grid. I make my living doing things that require the internet and computers. So that's not realistic for me either. But if I can reduce my reliance on others, or the system, then that helps me. So again, a bit of a rant, but let's talk about how this relates to food or food storage, or how, you know, prepping food storage in the urban context. So I want to talk about three things. We'll talk about storage, storage and production, and I think there's another thing I was going to talk about, but let's start with sort of food storage. And this is a topic that's covered by a lot of people, a lot of other podcasts. So I'm not going to go into too much depth. But you know, cause there's a couple things you need to think about, a couple basic rules that I think everyone covers, but you know, first store what you eat, back to being laid off. You know, my wife appreciates that we have some food stored, so we can grab something out of the pantry for dinner rather than having to go to the grocery store or something. But I got to tell you, if I were to break out the MREs and suggest, okay, here's tonight's dinner, that would not be going over so well. So, you know, we have some of those things. We have some things that aren't necessarily what we eat every day. And again, push comes to shove and there's nothing else to eat and it's been 12 hours since your last meal or a day or two, MREs are going to look awfully darn good. But that's not the plan, right? Those are emergency situations. Number two, rotate. First in, first out. And if you're eating if you're prepping or storing what you're eating, then that should be pretty simple. I have a running sort of par sheet. When I was in the restaurant business, learned to sort of have this inventory system that's, you know, not very ingenious. It's just something that I picked up working there, where you have a par, which is at any one time you want to have X amount on hand. Maybe it's 10 jars of peanut butter. We eat a lot of peanut butter. And so you look and you're like, well, I've got 3 jars of peanut butter. Well, we need 7. So ideally, so we're not going out and getting, you know, a ton of everything every time I need to go shopping. You're only replenishing a little bit as you go because you're eating it as you go. So rotate first in, first out. And then I think about my food storage in levels, or layers maybe. And you'll find that I tend to think about everything in this way. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just sort of the way I'm wired, or maybe it's a brain mindset that does this. But my first levels are short term to immediate need stuff. And it's mostly, you know, the kind of things we eat every day. We have a lot more of it, and we rotate it in and out. You know, pasta, peanut butter, rice, beans, oatmeal, meat in the freezer, that type of stuff. It's everyday food, the stuff that we eat. My second level are the foods that aren't necessarily what we eat every day, but are certainly something we can and do eat. Canned veggies and fruit are a good example. We really prefer to eat fresh fruit and vegetables, and living in Western Washington, we have great access to fresh and even organic fruits and vegetables, and a lot of it is locally grown. If, you know, go to farmers markets every Sunday if we want to. So we have great access to that kind of stuff. But, you know, canned veggies and fruit are definitely a backup, and it's, you know, pretty often that it's like, okay, between trips to the store, what are we going to do tonight for dinner or for lunch for the kids, and looking for, you know, a fruit or vegetable to round out the meal. And wow, you know, crack open a can of pineapples or crack open a can of green beans. Okay. So it's not everyday stuff, but it's stuff that we do eat but it's way more suited to long-term storage. So I think of, like, in terms of weeks or months for medium-term storage. So this is the stuff that, you know, that power goes out, storm hits, you know, you're going to eat the stuff in your refrigerator and your freezer and, you know, try to get through that. Maybe that's a couple days worth. Maybe it's longer, you know, depending on your freezer and your refrigerator. But then you have to start working through some of your backup in your pantry. And for me, if we're talking about a couple days, a couple weeks, even maybe, you know, a month or two, this is what I'm thinking, sort of medium-term storage. This is stuff, again, typically eat, or we can eat, but it's much easier to store, and it's a lot of canned stuff, it's a lot of dried goods, those kind of things. The third level that I have, and is what I think of sort of my emergency rations. And, you know, food that you might throw into a bug-out bag or 72-hour bag, or just, you know, I've got a winter bag or, you know, a get-home kit in my car, MREs. I found at a gun show these emergency rations. I think that they were, like, for water travel or something, because they're small, they're little cubes, and each cube is, like, I want to say each cube is, like, 500 calories or maybe even 1,000 calories. They kind of taste like shortbread, like almost like a cookie. So, you know, again, other than some sort of weird dessert for my kids, you know, it's not something we're going to eat, but it's there, and it's got tons of calories packed in it. And so, and it's really small. You know, there's 9 of them that I think are 3,000 calories. I think that's what it is. And it's really small. It's like the size of a small book. Freeze-dried foods, protein bars, beef jerky, dried meats, vegetables, those kind of things. These are all sort of things that, again, good for emergency, lightweight, easy to store a bunch of it in a backpack if necessary. So I think of those as emergency rations. And then last level of food prepping is the really long-term stuff. You know, things that we might need should the world go belly up. And, you know, I admit it, I don't really think that the world is going to go belly up. But I think there are a lot of different levels of things that go wrong that we might find ourselves in a situation where it's hard to pay for food, hard to find food, intermittent food delivery, right? And so, you know, the more you have prepared, the better off you're going to be. So long-term, world going belly up kind of storage. Dried beans, whole wheat, bulk food, you know, things that probably provide or things that need some prep to them. But things that are staple that you can easily store in bulk and will last, you know, 10 years, 15 years, you know, whatever, a year. So those are my three levels of food storage. Now, it probably breaks down in this way. You know, 60% is probably the food we eat every day, so my short term. Probably 20% is sort of medium storage, you know, the canned stuff, fruit, soups, Chef Boyardee raviolis, another example. I'd say 10% of my emergency rations, you know, MREs, things like that. And then I'd say 10% is the really long-term bulk stuff. Now, realistically, I probably don't have enough of the long-term stuff. And that is something that I am building up slowly. Again, I'm making a bit of a gamble. I don't really think I'm going to, I think the likelihood that we'll get into that situation is lower. So I am putting my time and effort against building up the types of things that I think are not only far more likely to happen, but probably will happen, and with some amount of regularity. You know, certain parts of this country, every winter, you know, power is going to go out due to an ice storm, or there's going to be hurricane season. We don't have a lot of hurricane. We don't have any hurricanes in the Pacific Northwest, but we get ice storms, tons of trees that, you know, wind storms, ice storms, rain storms, knock the trees down, knock the wires down. We, you know, it can lose power. As I've mentioned in the past, we've been really lucky. We haven't lost power since I've lived here, but it's certainly possible. And because of the weather here, we don't get a lot of snow, but what you do get is rain that suddenly the temperature drops and you get ice. You get, like in Texas, you know, you get a cold snap, you get a ton of rain, suddenly you get ice everywhere. Now, the difference between most places in Texas and Seattle is most of Texas is pretty flat, right? It becomes a skating rink. It's dangerous. You know, with the exception of those huge sort of interchange systems on the highways that tend to, like, go really high as they're sort of, you know, moving you from one highway to the next, it's a pretty flat place. Seattle is very hilly, and some of the hills are super steep and could be treacherous in rainy conditions, much less icy conditions. So doesn't take a lot to shut this town down from an ice perspective and stay shut down for a while if we continue to get the snap, because what sometimes happens is you during the day you get some sun, it melts, and then at night it freezes and you get it all over again. So my efforts are based around sort of the things that I think I'm facing on a more regular basis, and trying to sort of slowly build up the things that ultimately could happen, though I'm betting probably won't. So let's talk about space a little bit before we get into sort of leave this topic of food storage. You know, most urban situations, I believe that you should be able to put away at least 2 months worth of food, even in a small apartment. I think if you're really creative, I think if you make some choices about the kinds of things that you can, will, or willing to eat, or your family's willing to eat, I think it's totally possible for most of us to figure out how to tuck away 2 months worth of food, you know, under the bed, in spare closets, whatever. And there's just no such thing as a spare closet, but you know what I mean? Finding nooks and crannies here and there. It's hard. You might be constantly shifting food around, but if it's something you're serious about and you want to get creative about, I believe you can do it. I live in a small house, as I said before, it's a very small house, a little two-bedroom house. And we can store a lot more than 2 months, and we can do it without tripping over it. So if I really wanted to get serious about it and really go crazy, we can store a lot more than that. So that's food storage. But for me, again, yes, it's a good short-term solution. It's there. It's important. Again, because your first situation is power goes out. I don't want to be with somebody scrambling to the store, right? I want to be sitting in my little house, thinking about how we're going to keep warm, maybe getting a fire started in the fireplace, and safe and comfortable in the knowledge that we've got enough supplies to carry us through. But food production is really what I'm interested in, because I want to reduce my need to go to the grocery store very often. Now, full disclosure, you know, there's a lot of things that we're going to talk about in this podcast. I'm not an expert. I am doing some research. I'm figuring it out on my own. I'm talking with people. I'm learning as I go. So this podcast isn't meant to be an expert saying, here's what you should do, here are the answers. It's a discussion. And what I'd ultimately like to do is turn this, you know, maybe host Google Chats or Hangouts where I can have a topic and you have a sort of a forum discussion. It becomes an actual discussion. But at this point, it's me sort of having a theoretical discussion with you, and you're sort of using this as idea starters for yourself. And as I get feedback and questions and things via email and other ways, this can become gradually more interactive and an actual discussion and dialogue. So I'm not an expert about food production, and I'm an absolute beginner. I have dabbled in gardening for the past couple of years, and when I say dabble, what I mean is that I have planted some things in some pots or a small area in my yard, and then forgot about them. I mean, this is one of those things that year after year, every year I say, I'm going to do a little bit more. I'm going to pay more attention. And then spring hits and it's fantastic out, and one thing leads to another, and I completely blow off my garden. I'm making a commitment to not do that again this year. And I've got a plan, and I'm going to follow my plan. And I'm going to document my journey as I go, and we can all use it as sort of a learning experience. Certainly, the things that I'll be planting will probably be different than what you might plant, given where I live, and maybe my taste in food or whatever, but I think that this would be a good learning experience for everyone. So, you know, we'll get to see my progress, my success, and my failures, which I imagine there'll be plenty of failures because I'm new to this. So let's talk about my situation. Small house, really little piece of property. And not only that, I don't have great sunlight. There's tons of trees in the area. I've got the western facing, the western, the area of my yard that faces west is, there's a house right next to us, and it's not even 10 feet, I don't think, maybe 15 feet between the two houses. So they're pretty tight. So the area where I should get a ton of day-long sun is, I don't get as much as I would like. There is some sun there, but it's not great. My soil is kind of dry and kind of sandy. So, you know, I don't have a great situation to start with, but I think, again, this will be a great sort of lesson in how we might take mediocre, a so-so situation and actually get some food production out of it. You know, a couple topics that I've really started to become interested in is this idea of permaculture and food forestry. And I don't know if food forestry is necessarily different than permaculture, because I don't know that much about either. But I listened to the Survivalist podcast from, you know, with Jack Spierko, and these are two topics that he spends a lot of time talking about. And I have to admit, when I first started listening to the podcast, I want to hear about the guns and the gear and bugging out and survival in the woods. But as I've really sort of started to, you know, get involved in the subject and spend time with it and think about it in a much more realistic situation, His passion and love of permaculture and food forestry is really, really interesting to me. And, you know, as I said before, for me it's about self-sufficiency. And clearly Jack is a guy that, you know, is not only into self-sufficiency, but into, you know, creating systems that are self-sufficient and sustainable and working with nature. As opposed to against it, which I believe is one of the principle or the design, is that the design factors, the design theories, design principles of permaculture. Those are two things that I want to learn a lot more about, pardon me, but also try to perhaps put into practice in my own, call it food production, my own backyard, my own garden. But it's something that I'm going to have to kind of work up to. Because I'd be honest with you, my wife may not be so crazy about the idea of turning our backyard into some sort of permaculture sort of area, wild, you know, wild food forest. And frankly, with my past success in gardening, can't really say I blame her that, you know, I'm going to tear up the yard or do all sorts of things and then let it all kind of, who knows what happens. So I think if I can show some success and build on that, I can slowly take over larger areas of our small yard and turn it into food production, and which will also give me the time to sort of learn and kind of figure out what it is I want to do, because this idea of permaculture is really interesting. I have some basic understanding of the ideas and how to put it in place, but not really sure how to yet, or how I might do that for my own space. Because ultimately what I would love to do is have some fruit-bearing trees, some nut-bearing trees, and then all the support systems that do that. But I don't have a lot of space, and I don't necessarily want to tear things out, like trees or whatever, to put other things in. So, but I'm going to have to build up to that. So let's talk about my plan. What I'll do is outline my year one plan and then briefly talk about some sort of ongoing phases, because I don't know if there'll be year two or year three for different phases, because again, I'm going to be building off success, and it may take me, frankly, more than a year to get the kind of success I'm looking for to then take it to the next level. So year one. Year one, my food production goal is to start successfully putting some food on the table with our current garden space. I essentially have three spaces that I've identified as garden beds, and I'll probably supplement those with some large pots in some areas. We have an area in our driveway. It's kind of a, well, that gets tons of sun, and I think using pots, I can probably grow some things in that area and have it benefit from a lot of the sunlight that it gets. There's an organization called Seattle Tilth, and they have a Maritime Northwest Garden Guide, and I've picked that up, and I'm really using it as my, call it my Bible, my starting point. It's my primary source of information for the moment to get myself started. One of the things that they talk about, which is probably a super basic concept, but it was new to me, and not the idea of rotation, but the actual sort of order of rotation I'd never heard of, which is leaf, root, flower, fruit. And that's the order that, I guess, in terms of nutrients and what is the nitrates, is it? Is it nitrates? Is it? See, again, I'm demonstrating my ignorance here, but it's certain kinds of plants need more nutrients, other kinds of chemicals, and that others than others, and then by sort of that order allows you to sort of the plants to sort of fill the soil with nutrients that other plants will use, kind of thing. And that's a really lousy description, and probably off by more than a little bit, but you get my point. Leaf, root, flower, fruit is what I'm going to try to follow. So what does my year look like? And this is, again, a basic plan, but this is what I'm going to follow. So, you know, January, I'm going to order my seeds. February, I'm going to sow indoors cauliflower, onions, and cabbage. And then outdoors, I can get garlic and shallots into the ground. March, we'll sow outdoors arugula, Swiss chard, and snap peas. April, we'll sow indoors basil. Sow outdoors potatoes and quinoa. May, sowing outdoors radishes. June, we're going to transplant the cauliflower, onions, and cabbage, and then sow outdoors turnips. July, sow outdoor carrots, kale, and chicory. August, I'll transplant the basil outdoors, and, you know, August might be later than it needs to be. Maybe it might end into July, but if you're not familiar with the Pacific Northwest, specifically Seattle, we don't get reliable sunshine until late July, early August. A lot of times, it's July 4th weekend is sort of the typical. We stop getting regular rain, and you can count on more sun than rain. But that's not always the case. Certainly by August, almost always, it's when our summer really begins. September, I get, you know, September is probably when I'm going to want to plant some flowers, some things, some cover crop to overwinter, I guess is what it's called, or plant for rotation into the next season. I'm not sure what those flowers are going to be or what they should be. So that'll be something that I'll be looking into and figuring out as I go through the spring and the summer. And then October, I think I plant garlic for overwintering. Again, sort of start the next year off, or the next season off, I should say. Now, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to plant for any of these individual items. I think that I'll get to plant a little of each, you know, certainly not a ton. I will probably get in some cases enough things to like have more than we need that we might either can or do some other things with. For instance, potatoes grow pretty fast and pretty easy, so that might be something that I get more than I need of. But the goal here is success. Get some food on the table, the kind of foods that we eat and enjoy, a little bit less reliant on the grocery store, and learn. Learn what the heck I'm doing, because I am clueless. Phase two will be to take the successes from year one and a half, and expand to some other areas of the property that are not slated for garden use. Maybe some more pots on the driveway, maybe some other areas that we can just turn, again, into gardens. Phase three, I want to add chickens. Protein is one of those things that's hard to grow, hard to get on your own. Seattle, which is, you know, one of the benefits of living in a very left-leaning place, and there are a couple, not many. In Seattle, any Seattle resident is allowed to have chickens. You can have up to four, I believe, and you can't have a rooster though. So it's not only allowed, but it's encouraged, really, which is kind of cool. One of the mindset benefits of living in this part of the country is the awareness of sustainability, of the difficulty and problems inherent in sort of industrial food production. And I'm not even talking about sort of the things that go into food production, but just sort of in terms of the chemicals or whatever. I'm just talking about the reliance on that, the dangers inherent with relying on that industrial food production. So living in this part of the country, while if you want to talk about guns, you're looked at like you're an absolute criminal. On the other hand, the absolute cultural embracing of small farms, community pea patches, the ability for you to grow food and have chickens and things on your own property, that's really cool. So I have to say that's a huge benefit. Like I said, there's a lot of things that I don't like about the politics here, but that's one of the absolute positives. One of the things I have to figure out is, A, again, my wife, not too crazy about the idea of chicken, but I also have a dog. And all evidence suggests that the dog is not going to be a fan of the chickens. He might bark at them and try to get at them, which means that I think they'll be too scared to lay eggs. So I got to do some research there. Our dog is absolutely a member of our family, and if having chickens means I'm just going to have these birds that are living in fear of the animal that's snarling at them on the other side of the chicken wire, then that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because they won't lay eggs stressed out like that, as I understand it. Now, the other thing that I would love to do, and I have sort of in the back of my mind a plan to do, especially as my son gets a little older, is I'd love to learn how to hunt. Go get some, bring some protein home that way. Again, I'm a city kid. Didn't grow up hunting. I know some basics, but I don't know how to hunt, which is pretty sad, I suppose, for someone who's in the prepping world. But that's the reality. And so that's another sort of thing I want to add to my repertoire, but also can add to our self-sufficient food situation. So phase three is chickens. Sort of a sub-note to that is I need to figure out, I need to start hunting and work on bringing food home. The ideal way I won't go into that further because that's probably a topic all in itself. But I ultimately want to sort of hook up with somebody who knows how to hunt and go out with them and figure it out. Phase four is actually to turn our backyard into a mini food forest. This is what I talked about earlier. Whether it's sort of truly sort of this permaculture kind of situation or a food forest and sort of, I'm throwing these terms around. I don't necessarily know if I'm using them incorrectly, but the point is, I would like to turn our little backyard into a food producing situation beyond just a garden. Some fruit trees, some nut trees, and whatever support species is needed to sort of help let those thrive. But a few years, I could not only produce enough food for us to eat on a regular basis, eat certain kinds of food, but potentially have lots of extras for canning, you know, drying things out, maybe, you know, trade with friends, you know. So just lessening the reliance on the industrial food production. We're never going to be able to raise enough food to completely feed ourselves. And I'll be honest, there's tons of things that we will have to find somewhere else. I love red meat. Love red meat. Hamburger, steaks, pork chops. You know, I'm not going to raise a pig in my yard. So I'm going to have to continue to buy that stuff. So the question is, you know, how much of that, or can I supplement some of my love of meat with like deer, venison, or maybe elk? Who knows, right? So that's my plan. Pretty basic. Not too aggressive, not too ambitious, I don't think. Certainly for year one isn't super ambitious. And I'll be updating or doing podcast update on progress, you know, at least once a month and then probably much more often as we get into the spring and summer seasons, because I would imagine a bunch of my time is going to be spent in the garden making these things work, and I can report back on how it's going. And maybe even by that time we're having this podcast turns into an actual Google Hangout where we can have some interactive discussions. So this wraps up episode 3 of the Urban Prepping Podcast. It's the podcast about living a more prepared and self-sufficient lifestyle in the urban context. Don't stand back and wonder if you can do something to change your situation. Jump in and start swinging. You will make progress. As always, please, if you have any feedback for me, you love it, you hate it, this is what you like about it, this is what you don't like about it, your tips, ideas, even if it's, hey, you know what, stop doing it. You're wasting your time. I'm interested. You can reach me at loneurbanprepper@gmail.com. Please leave a review, good, bad, or otherwise, on iTunes. Helps this podcast get found when I have reviews. I think even if they're negative, at least they're reviews where people are talking about it. Have a great day, and thanks again for listening.